Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. As real estate investors, we're very concerned with money. But is it the death of money? That's what Jim Rickards thinks. We'll hear from him today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms, with a froggy voice just stepping off the Investors Summit at Sea. Let's say hello to our co-host and co-sailor, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
What an amazing week.
It was an amazing week. It's, you know, it's funny, that adjective came up quite a lot, actually, the term amazing. But as always, we had a great group of people from all over the world, all over the United States, people of all different ages, all different ethnic groups and demographics and backgrounds and different real estate niches we talked about. And it's great just getting everybody together and taking a look at what's going on in the world, what's going on at the street level, putting those two things together and figuring out how does it relate to me and my unique set of circumstances, and what do I need to do to move forward to mitigate the risks and capitalize on the opportunities.
You know, we go to a lot of conferences, and I think the big difference between the summit and the conferences we go to is you go hear a speaker and then maybe catch him for a minute in his booth. Here you hear a speaker, and then you have lunch with him, have dinner with him, see him around the deck, party with him at night or her. You get a chance to interact with people and you flush the ideas that you heard out that day around the room and it percolates.
Right. Well, in professional sales training, and we always use this adage, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. So for a doctor, also, it's this concept of clarifying questions. When you have the ability to find out a piece of information, and it isn't the end of the learning, it's the beginning of the learning, and the way you dig deeper is to ask these clarifying questions. And to your point, Robert, when you go to your typical conference, it's a one-way delivery of information. And so you hear a lot, and then you have to process. Maybe you get some interaction with some fellow conference attendees, but most of the time it's up to you to try to figure out how to fill in the blanks in your own mind. And that's great because it starts the thought process. On our summit, our goal is to help you really complete or at least take that thought process to a much deeper level by giving you the opportunity to interact with both the speakers over an extended period of time, but to also interact with your fellow summiteers who have all different types of backgrounds. But the other thing that's really great is to watch the other faculty members talk to each other and clarify their own understanding at a very high level. We had an opportunity. We all went out to dinner for the alumni dinner. We're in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and you very graciously sat me at the table, and we're all there together. And we're sitting there with Robert Kiyosaki, Simon Black, and Peter Schiff. And we're talking about Bitcoin and gold and what's going on in the currency world and what does this all really mean. And to watch Robert Kiyosaki ask Simon Black clarifying questions about Bitcoin, to hear Peter Schiff chiming in on what he thought was going on with gold and his perspective on Bitcoin. And they didn't all agree on everything. And so while they were trying to work out those differences, you know, we're just sitting there like flies on the wall, soaking it all in. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And I don't know where else you can go on earth to have that kind of experience.
Very late in the game, Robert and Kim Kiyosaki decided to join us again and come back on the Investors Summit. And so we didn't have a lot of time to promote that. Only a few people who signed up did so after that announcement, but it was incredible to spend time with them. They're such gracious people, and we put them to work hard, and they did a ton of different presentations. Then, of course, hung out on the catamaran, which was awesome. The big surprise was Simon Black. He came with us last year. His schedule dictated he must be in Asia when the summit left, but he was able to get himself to Puerto Rico in time to surprise our summiteers, got on board, did an amazing presentation, and then we all went to dinner. And you're right, where else do you get that kind of opportunity? And then the rest of the summit, you've got the summiteers interacting with newfound information in a lot of ways, because the presentations were the start of the conversation. One of the things that came up, of course, is that we're going to be with Simon in Cancun in April. And it's going to be an incredible, incredible event. Before we're done, we'll tell you how you can find out more about that event. But one of the folks who was missing at the table that night, who will be in Cancun for this event, is Jim Rickards.
Yeah, no, if you're not familiar with Jim Rickards, he's the author of Currency Wars, a best-selling book about a simulation that the U.S. government did to find out how vulnerable it was to what was going on in the currency world, and could the U.S. economy be attacked through the manipulation of currencies globally. Interesting, interesting concept. And he followed that book up with a second best-selling book called The Death of Money. Both of those books are in our recommended reading list on our website under the Resources tab. I've read them both, and these are the kind of books that I have highlighted, dog-eared, written all up and down the margins. I've got all kinds of little circles, which is my code for action items, follow-up books and reports that I want to look at, things I want to dig deeper into, consultations I want to go have with advisors to try to figure out how some of this stuff affects me, questions. You know, I get little question marks everywhere so I can go follow up. And I'm very, very excited about the opportunity to meet with Jim Rickards face-to-face in Cancun and have an opportunity to do some of those clarifying questions I was talking about earlier.
When we come back, you're going to have a chance to meet Jim Rickards next on the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. And why U.S. real estate continues to drop, Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Are you still sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out when and where you're going to buy those investment properties? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Atlanta, Georgia is still on sale, but you better act fast because the deals are almost gone. Hey, this is Ken Corsini with Georgia Residential Partners, and I want you to know that there may not be a better investing opportunity than Atlanta right now. Listed as one of the fastest growing markets in the country, both in terms of jobs and population, Forbes predicts 26% appreciation over the next 3 years. At Georgia Residential Partners, we sell turnkey, cash-flowing investment properties. We also sell wholesale properties at insane discounts. We're launching a new home construction product this summer as well, and if you're still nervous about stepping out into another market, I will personally partner with you on a small portfolio of homes, if that's what it takes. Don't wait any longer. Check us out at gainvesting.com or call our office at 770-924-5450. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. If you want to expand your consciousness, expand your wealth, expand your future, and have more delight and excite in your future than in your past, keep listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, the number one downloaded podcast on real estate investing. We, of course, talk broader picture economics, and today we are very excited to have Jim Rickards with us. He is an economist, attorney, fund manager, and probably better known as the author of two amazing books, the first book, Currency Wars, and now the recent book, The Death of Money. Jim Rickards, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. We're big fans of your work. And, you know, a lot of people talk about money and gold and the Fed and all that. But I think the thing that catches readers right from the beginning of Currency Wars is the fact that you have a little different perspective than most. Can you give us the quick overview of your background?
Sure, Robert. I'd be glad to. I mean, just my background, I'm a lawyer by training, but spent my entire career in finance. So that includes 10 years at the start of my career as international tax counsel at Citibank. That was at a time when Citibank had offices in more countries than the U.S. had embassies. So it was a great international platform and kind of worked all over the world at early stage of my career. Later moved to Wall Street, was general counsel at one of the leading investment banks that specialized in government securities. So that gave me a background in federal finance and bond markets generally. And then I was around it when a lot of the derivatives were invented and mortgage-backed securities, the early days of that market and so forth. And then in the 90s, I worked in the hedge funds, hedge fund area, in particular long-term capital management, which is a hedge fund that was rescued by the Federal Reserve in 1998, and I was the lead negotiator of that bailout, so certainly had a front row seat in financial meltdown, financial catastrophe. After that, I ran a stock exchange for a few years, worked in a couple other hedge funds, but also in the 2000s, after 9/11, I was asked by the national security community to pitch in, working with both the intelligence community and the Defense Department on a lot of counterterrorism, counterterror finance issues. My expertise was, of course, mainly in the financial area. No one was asking me to, jump out of a helicopter with a knife between my teeth, but did quite a bit of work on insider trading in advance of 9/11, how we could model that in ways that we could spot it again and possibly head off another spectacular terrorist attack using stock market indications. And as a result of this, I developed models that basically looked at financial markets and in a different way than Wall Street was doing at the time, and that produced signals that would help one kind of see certain things in advance based on the activity of other market participants. It wasn't as if you had a crystal ball, but the idea is that there's more information in the aggregate than there is in any one individual person, and that aggregate information is expressed in market prices. But, of course, you have to know how to take a price and disaggregate it into all of its parts, and then look at those parts and use inferential methods to draw certain conclusions. That's the kind of modeling I did. And more recently, I've applied that or described it in my books. But one of the things in particular I did that combined kind of everything I've just described is in 2009, I was asked by the Pentagon to help facilitate and then also participate in the first ever financial war game. Of course, the Pentagon's been doing war games for a long time. They didn't need any help from me in wargaming in general, but this was the first time we did a financial wargame, so there were no weapons that would, what we call kinetic weapons that could shoot or explode, no bombs or planes or ships or anything of that sort. The weapons were financial, so stocks, bonds, derivatives, commodities, currencies, things that your audience and your investors are familiar with, and in the hands of countries used not for normal commercial purposes or trading purposes, but actually to inflict damage on your opponents. How could they be used and how would they play out? Did that in over a few days in 2009. I wrote about that in my first book, Currency Wars, which came out in 2011. My second book, The Death of Money, came out in 2014. I talk more there about some of the earlier work I did for the intelligence community, and I have a newsletter that it comes out now called Strategic Intelligence. That is where I do my my latest work, and working on a new book now, and a lot of what I'll be talking about in the new book will be appearing in Strategic Intelligence months ahead. So it's really a combination of the financial and the geopolitical, and that's my expertise.
Hey, Jim, I have to admit that Russell Gray, my co-host on The Real Estate Guys, read your book, said you have to read this. I got a copy of it. It sat on my desk for a few days because it just, currency wars. I'm a real estate guy. I picked up the book and the story where you were explaining this currency war simulation. I mean, it's like a mystery model. It was an absolutely amazing story. And I think, the encouraging part was that you were part of this simulation, but kind of the discouraging part was just how little the government seemed to be aware of some of these things.
Well, it's an interesting question, Robert. And first of all, I give the government a lot of credit for doing it in the first place. You're right. They're new to some of these things, but so is everybody. I mean, the idea that economics and warfare go together by itself is not new. You go back to the beginning of World War One. Interestingly, John Maynard Keynes was one of the strongest voices in the English government for not going off the gold standard in 1914 at the beginning of World War One. All the major combatants, so Germany, France, and Belgium, and others, went off the gold standard, but the UK did not. And by staying on the gold standard, that actually enhanced their credit, enhanced the role of London as the global financial center at the time, and enabled that to get financing, borrow money, to ultimately win the war. So the connection between economics, credit, and warfare is not new. But what is new is that instead of just using finance as kind of a supplement or a way to finance the warfare, that the financial arena becomes the place where you fight the war, not just support the war. So what we're talking about are financial weapons. We did that war game at a top-secret weapons laboratory outside of Washington, a place where they've developed cruise missiles and drones and GPS and Tomahawk missiles and a lot of other technology. So it was an interesting venue and not an easy place to get into, I can assure you. But based on that, I've been doing a lot of work since then, taking those lessons and applying them. And, you know, listeners should not think of the United States government as one big monolithic blob. I mean, in fact, there are all kinds of agencies with all kinds of roles and missions, whether it's the Treasury, the Fed, the Pentagon, the intelligence community, Homeland Security, and many, many others. And, you know, they don't all think, they're not all of one mind. Even within an agency, you can find certain people who are kind of champions for certain ideas and others who resist. So it's a much more complicated place than I think a lot of people imagine. But, again, it's easy to criticize for not being, you know, kind of totally on top of the issue. And there's some cause for concern there, but I would rather, you know, compliment the people who are trying to figure this out. Certainly the Russians are doing it. You look at what's going on in Ukraine today. People say, you know, is there a danger of warfare between Russia and the United States? Well, I would say the war has already started. It's not a shooting war. It's a cyber war. It's a financial war. But we're already at war with Russia. You know, we say we don't want to put boots on the ground. We'll use economic sanctions. And the United States kind of treats the economic sanctions as an extension of diplomacy, but from Putin's perspective, he considers it an act of war. So if they bring in, you know, heavy weapons or tanks or anti-aircraft guns in eastern Ukraine, as far as Putin's concerned, that's a legitimate response to sanctions and you know, what's going on with the price of oil and what's going on in you know, prohibiting Russian companies from accessing dollar-denominated debt markets. As far as Putin's concerned, those are both acts of war. I think Putin's right about that. I'm not a Putin fan, but I do try to be realistic and analytic in looking at these geopolitical developments. And I would say that there's a role for diplomacy here, but economic sanctions are actually a form of war. So some of the things we did in 2009 are actually playing out in real time, and other countries, whether it be Russia or China or Saudi Arabia, Iran, have learned those lessons. And I think that financial warfare is really the future of warfare. Now, the problem for investors, investing is hard enough as it is. I mean, you've got to figure out inflation versus deflation, asset allocation, portfolio allocation, risk management, volatility. You've got a lot of things to figure out. People are at different stages of their, you know, careers. You know, early on, you might want to save more. Later in life, you might want to spend more, or at least, you know, kind of preserve capital versus being more aggressive. Well, that's hard enough as it is, and I'm certainly involved in that area, but when you throw cyber warfare and financial warfare on top of that, and you see the risk that markets could be closed, liquidity could be lost, volatility could be injected in certain markets, not for fundamental economic reasons that people have tried to learn about, but for geopolitical and warfare reasons, then it's even more challenging. So what I really try to do is merge those two areas. Think of it, you know, a Venn diagram. I think most listeners are familiar with a Venn diagram. It's the simplest version is two big circles converging, coming together, so there's an overlap. Well, one big circle is, you know, national security and defense, intelligence, and diplomacy. The other big circle is capital markets, so stocks, bonds, currencies, derivatives, foreign exchange. Where those two circles come together, that overlap, that's really my area of expertise, and I try to move back and forth between the two circles. I bring Wall Street expertise to the national security community, and I try to inject national security, geopolitical considerations into my economic analysis. And again, that's what I'm doing in my my newsletter, Strategic Intelligence.
So, Jim, before we're done, we're going to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of your newsletter, because it's great, great stuff. I mean, the books are amazing, but obviously they come out every few years, and quite an undertaking. You know, in Death of Money, you talk a lot about inflation and deflation and the Fed's mission there. But why is it that deflation is such a bad thing?
Well, deflation is not a bad thing for a lot of consumers, a lot of individuals. You know, when we pull up to the gas pump, and if gas used to be $4 a gallon, and now it's $2 a gallon, and so you're saving $2 a gallon relative to what it was recently, and let's say you got a pickup truck or van, or you're taking the kids to school, or whatever it might be, and you're using, let's say, 50 gallons a week. Well, 50 gallons at $2 a gallon saving, that's $100 in your pocket right there, and that comes to over $5,000 a year. So that's a good thing for the consumer, but think of it from the point of view of the producer. If I'm paying less at the pump, that producer is receiving less. Well, what if the producer borrowed money, which they did, by the way, in the form of junk bonds, to build all these wells and do all this fracking? I mean, I think people are generally aware that one of the reasons the price of oil has come down, the price of gas at the pump has come down, is because of all the new production coming on stream from fracking. It's also a global economic slowdown. That's a separate story, but just looking at the supply side for a minute, all that coming from fracking. Well, that's great for consumers, and it's great for lower prices, but a lot of that was financed with debt and junk bonds, and those were priced in such a way that people expected oil to be, you know, $70, $80, $90, even $100 a barrel, sometimes higher, to be able to pay off that debt. Well, you put oil down at $50 or $60 a barrel, which is where it is, a lot of that debt's going to go into default. And you say, well, where's the debt? Well, look around, because some of it might be in your 401k. In other words, I talked to an investor the other day and said, do you have a 401k? And the person said, yeah. And I said, do you have any bond funds in there? He says, well, I'm not sure. I think so. Actually, yeah, I do. I said, do you know what bonds are in your bond fund? He said, no, I have no idea. I said, well, you might want to take a look, because, you know, if that was sold to you by a broker at Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or, you know, any of the big brokerage firms, you know, if it's some kind of high yield fund, you look inside, you might find that you own some of those fracking bonds. So there are going to be a lot of losses coming from that. So again, I'm all for lower gas at the pump, and that is good for consumers. The other problem is, think about it from the government's point of view. You know, I just described a situation where with gas $2 a gallon lower at the pump, that's going to put $100 a week in your pocket. Well, that's good for all of us, but the government can't tax it. That's like getting a raise. That's like getting a $5,000 a year raise, but the government can't tax it. Your taxes are the same. You know, whether gas is $4 or $2, you have to pay the same tax bill. Well, you got money in your pocket, the government can't tax. Well, guess what? The government doesn't like that. Deflation increases the real value of the debts the government has to pay, but they can't get any tax revenue from you just because you're paying lower prices at Walmart or Costco or the pump. So it's a problem for federal finance. So again, I think deflation is good for the working person, for the individual who maybe can't get a raise, or maybe spouse is laid off, or, you know, whatever, and maybe you got a lot of student loan debt, whatever you're sort of confronting. You like the lower prices. That's like getting a raise. But you have to understand that government hates it because they can't tax it. And so that's part of my economic analysis, that the world wants to deflate. There's no question that the natural state of the world is deflationary for some of the reasons we've mentioned and others, demographics, technology, deleveraging, and a lot of things that are going on at kind of a macro level. But the government has to have inflation. If the government doesn't get inflation, we're going to have a debt fiasco on our hands, starting with government debt, but also trickling through to corporate debt, emerging markets debt. A lot of this debt can't get repaid except through inflation. So if you have a situation where you see deflation, but you understand that the government wants inflation, then it's fairly easy to see what policy is going to be. They're going to keep printing money. They have to. There's no way out. I don't expect the Fed to raise interest rates this year. I mean, I think most analysts do expect them to raise interest rates. The Fed has certainly signaled that, but they've also said they're data dependent. The data is coming in really weak. So how on earth are you going to raise interest rates when that's just going to add to the deflation at a time when you're trying to get inflation? So there's an example of how I think investors have to be nimble. You have to really think things through, and don't just look at simple cause and effect, but say, well, what next, what next, what next? Just keep asking questions until you can get to the bottom of what's going on. That's what I do in my books. You're right about books, Robert. They, you know, we live in a world of instant digital gratification. Everybody wants to write a blog or put out a tweet or do something online and get a bunch of clicks the next day. And books are an old school, old fashioned kind of process. They take a long time to write. They take a year or longer to research and write. And then you've got editing and printing and shipping. And, you know, it's a tangible physical thing. It's not just a digital thing. I mean, you can't get it on Kindle, but there's still a physical book involved. So I'm working on a new book now. It'll be out next year, really 2016. So in the meantime, my existing books, The Currency Wars and The Death of Money, are out there. They're still very fresh, very timely. I mean, you know, Currency Wars came out in 2011. If you open it up to Chapter 8, it talks about Ukraine and Russia and natural gas and energy. So it was, and of course, you pick up any, go online and pick up any newspaper today, the headlines are all talking about Currency Wars. So that book is still very fresh, and the new book, I think, really tells readers where we're going a year or two from now. But in the meantime, between now and then, a lot of these ideas that I'm working on in the new book are, as I say in the newsletter, Strategic Intelligence. That's available from Agora Financial. Probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with that. But if you just go online, put in James Rickards, Rickards, and Strategic Intelligence, or Agora, A-G-O-R-A, just put any of those in a web browser, you'll find it very easily.
Yeah, it's great stuff. You know, it continues the conversation, right? Because the great thing about a book is you immerse yourself in it. I can go and I can see a news clip, and obviously hear on the news a lot, and read a blog from different opinions, which is all awesome stuff. But when you have a chance to sit down and really immerse yourself in the subject, I mean, I really had a paradigm shift after reading Currency Wars. I'm not sure I would have had in a 2 or 3 minute video. So I am certainly looking forward to your next book. Hey, Jim, before we let you get out of here, one of the things you mentioned in The Death of Money is the 5 investments that'll help people kind of weather the storm, and we don't want to steal all the thunder, but one of those, we're happy to say, is real estate. You talk about land. Our listeners, obviously, real estate investors. Can you talk about how real estate ought to fit into a good portfolio?
Sure. One of the problems investors confront, Robert, as we mentioned, is I describe the economy as being right on the knife edge of inflation and deflation. Now, if I told you we were definitely going to have inflation, you would know exactly what to do. You could go out and build that portfolio. If I told you we were definitely going to have deflation, again, you would know exactly what to do. You could build that portfolio. But what I'm saying is we're right on the tipping point. It could go either way. And that's not a, mushy, kind of throw up your hands kind of point. It actually describes the dynamic the economy is in today. As I said, the world wants to deflate, but the governments are trying to force inflation, and so it's like a needle that's going back and forth right on the tipping point. So what can an investor do? Well, there's one way to do it is to spread your bets. Make some that are good deflation bets, make some that are good inflation bets. One of the things I like about real estate actually does well in both scenarios. It's one of those assets that does well in inflation and deflation. I can explain why briefly. Inflation is kind of an easy one, so prices start to go up. We've seen, but hard assets, so land, gold, fine art, all those things will go up with it. And we've certainly seen episodes of that going back to the 70s and times more recently. So real estate's a good inflation hedge, and I think most people understand that intuitively. Deflation is a little harder to get. You say, well, gee, isn't the price going down? Well, it's true that the price might go down in nominal terms, but the development costs go down faster. So if you have either raw land with development potential, so maybe there's not a building on it right now, but it's in a good location, it's got the right zoning, et cetera, and you've got the potential to put up a building. Or maybe you've got a modest structure of some kind and you're getting some rents, which is good, or it's farmland producing some income, but you're in a position, you could tear that down and build something bigger later on. Well, now in deflation, okay, the price might go down a little bit, but your development costs go down more. So all the stuff you need to build, so labor, steel, wood, glass, architect's fees, all those things go down even faster. So when it comes down, you can develop it at a lower entry point and catch the next inflation wave right behind it. My favorite example is the Empire State Building. The Empire State Building was built in the depths of the Great Depression. That building was built in 1931, right in the middle of the Great Depression at very, very low cost, and it's been a great investment ever since. So I like land, not all land, but for a slice of a portfolio, because when you factor in the development potential and development costs, it works well in inflation and deflation.
All right, great stuff. Well, obviously, listeners are going to want to hear more from you. They can do that by checking out your two great books, Currency Wars and The Death of Money, or, of course, subscribing to Strategic Intelligence. When we come back, we're going to give you a chance to learn how you can hang out with Jim Rickards and the Real Estate Guys. We're going to be at an event together in April. Can't wait to tell you about that. Jim, thanks so much for your time and great work today.
Thank you, Robert.
You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. More when we come back. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Robert Helms. As a real estate investor, you know you need to be concerned about asset protection. When an investor asks me about the litigation explosion in America and what they can do to better protect their real estate assets, I like to refer them to Corporate Direct. Equity happens, but it can be limited without solid asset protection in place. And Corporate Direct protects your assets. Corporate Direct is owned and operated by Garrett Sutton. He's an attorney, best-selling author, and one of Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad advisors. Garrett and his staff are knowledgeable, helpful, and surprisingly affordable. And I know, I've used Corporate Direct and have been exceedingly satisfied with their service. They're on the web at corporatedirect.com, or you can call them at 1-800-600-1760. That's corporatedirect.com or 1-800-600-1760. You know you need asset protection for your real estate, so visit corporatedirect.com or 1-800-600-1760. Find them on the resource page at realestateguysradio.com. That's corporatedirect.com.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And if you're serious about learning how to invest in real estate, listen to the Real Estate Guys. They really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, the number one downloaded podcast on real estate investing. Thanks for tuning into the program today. Great stuff from Jim Rickards. Just a moment, we'll tell you how you can see Jim Rickards live and get a chance to hang out with him. It's going to be an extraordinary event. But before that, we have to do something we do every week on The Real Estate Guys. It's your chance to play real estate trivia. You can win a prize today by knowing the answer to today's real estate trivia question, which, of course, has something to do with real estate, and it's trivial. But as soon as you hear the question and think you know the answer or want to take a guess, send that to us to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name and your mailing address so that if you're the winner, you can get a copy of Robert Kiyosaki's brand new book, Second Chance. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, we had Gina Lofton on the show, and we gave away an autographed copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Here was our question. Name the largest metropolitan area in the United States not on a navigable body of water. The answer, Dallas, Texas. You can join us in Dallas for our field trip in late May. All the information on our website at realestateguysradio.com. We'll be checking out that great marketplace. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. The country of Canada actually has two national sports. Name them. Many countries have a national sport, but Canada has two national sports. Do you know what they are, or can you take a guess? Just send us your answer along with your name and your mailing address to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. The first person with the right answer is going to win a brand new copy of Second Chance. That's Robert Kiyosaki's new book. It's just come out. Had an interview with Robert a few weeks back about it. That can be yours if you know the answer to today's trivia question. Just send it to us to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Great stuff today from Jim Rickards. We'll tell you how you can join Jim and the Real Estate Guys next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Over the last few years, I've had the privilege of sharing the services of Paradigm Life with you loyal Real Estate Guys Radio listeners through our website, www.beyourbank.com, and also on the annual Investor Summit at Sea. Subsequently, we have seen a variety of financial situations across the socioeconomic spectrum and how everyone, regardless of their situation, would improve their financial lives by following the system we specialize in. As a result of this experience, we have created an online e-learning system so anyone without obligation can learn about the infinite banking concept. This free e-learning program is found on our website, www.beyourbank.com. So check it out today. The website again is www.beyourbank.com.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Donald Trump, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show today. Yeah, my voice is a little growly, but that's because I've been talking and having great conversations and out on a boat and all that stuff for a week. I always lose my voice during the Investor Summit, but it is worth it. Next week on The Real Estate Guys radio program, you're going to hear the show we recorded live from the Investor Summit. You'll hear from Peter Schiff and Robert Kim Kiyosaki and Ken McElroy and Tommy Hopkins and lots more of the faculty members, so be sure and tune in for that. Amazing to hear from Jim Rickards.
Yes, you know, as I mentioned, I'm just a huge fan of his work. He's a big, big brain, very intellectual. He introduced me to several concepts in his book. In Currency Wars, he talked about chaos theory, and we've mentioned it a few times on the show. This concept is one that really helped me understand how something goes from order to chaos quickly. You know, Simon talks all the time about slowly at first and then suddenly. It begins slowly and then all at once. And this idea that we don't know when that tipping point will come, and the mathematical theory behind when and how that happens is really fascinating. And so when you hear these guys that are these big, big brains and they're thinking about these complex problems, and they're trying to extrapolate out what that will manifest like in the real world, and then how it trickles down and affects the Main Street investor. It's an exercise you kind of have to have, because this is a complex global economy. It's not the same old world we had 50 years ago. America, arguably not the dominant superpower, clearly a superpower, but not the dominant superpower, maybe militarily, but not financially, not economically. And then the trends, which direction is the U.S. economy going versus where other economies are going? And then the interactivity. There's a lot of interdependence. There's a lot of independence. There's a lot of dependence. And trying to figure out how what's going on, say, for example, in China could affect the U.S. Many people have always felt like as goes the U.S., so goes the world. But that's not so true anymore. So there's just lots of things that the financial planning community has always stood on as basic principles that have changed. The underlying premises have changed. And if your philosophies and strategies don't change to adopt the new realities, which is what Jim Rickards is talking about, then you could potentially make decisions which completely worked in the past, which completely will not work in the future.
That's it. The only thing constant is change, and our world is changing from an economic perspective incredibly. One of the things we talked about a lot this week on the summit was that very thing. Our theme this year was to predict and prepare for the future. And of course, having a panel with both Robert Kiyosaki and Peter Schiff on it was amazing. Each of these gentlemen both predicted a crash, in fact, a bigger crash than the one that happened in 2008, and they're both standing by that. Now, they don't have a crystal ball, they don't have dates, but what we know is something is coming. We don't know how it's going to manifest. One of the things Mr. Rickards talks about is how we can get our mind around currencies, because today we live in a world with all fiat currencies, meaning there is no intrinsic value to money. Originally there was, and there's not today. So the value of a particular currency is always in relation to other currencies. When we hear, well, the dollar has gotten stronger, it doesn't really mean the dollar has any more strength. It means that the dollar is strong against another currency that is likely suffering. And it takes a while to get your mind around this stuff, but we're super excited to be hanging out with Jim Rickards in Cancun. The event takes place in April 23rd to the 26th, and it's completely sold out. It's been sold out for months. We have just a few tickets available through the Real Estate Guys. This is not our event. It's Simon Black's event, and we are very honored to be a part of it. And he said, you know what? Your group is amazing, and I want to make sure that we have at least some of your listeners there. So if you're interested in hanging out with Jim Rickards, Simon Black, the Real Estate Guys, and a few more amazing folks, which have not been announced yet, but we're excited about. You're definitely going to want to get to the event All the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com. Under events, you'll see Simon Black's Global Summit.
To me, I mean, the cost of travel, the cost of admission, the time off from whatever it is you do to make a living or manage your investments, to go learn from people like this, to put yourself in an environment where you get to study and think deeply, to interact with other people. You know, when we invited Robert and Kim Kiyosaki to come, they are very excited because they're still very much students. They have a lot of money that they're managing. They've made a lot of money in their lifetime. And like anybody who has that responsibility, they're always studying. One of the takeaways from the summit Robert talked about was how important it is to constantly be studying, constantly be learning. Obviously, we're conference junkies, and it's not about us and our conferences. We just go to the conferences we think are great, and we invite you to come along. And so we are enthusiastically promoting this one. After having spent some time with Simon, we know he puts on quality events. We know he attracts quality speakers. We know he attracts quality people. And the fact that he would open up a sold-out event and make tickets available to our audience exclusively. Nobody else on the earth can get in to this event except people who come through the Real Estate Guys. So that's just quite an honor. And that says something about how he feels about our audience and the quality of people we attract. So if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, gee, I wonder if I should go, let me just push you over the edge a little bit and encourage you to come out. If it's good enough for Robert Kiyosaki, as smart as he is, Robert and Kim, they're going to come out to learn. We're all going to be there. Come out and say hi. We'd love to spend time with you. It's 4 days, Cancun. There's worse places in the world to hang out, right? It's going to be a ton of fun. It's all there, realestateguysradio.com under events.
You know, it's been said that we tend to regret the things in life we don't do a lot more than we regret the things that we do. Sometimes you make a decision to either come or not. A lot of folks were right on the fence to come on the summit or not and decided not to. And they missed such an extraordinary opportunity. I mean, just to hang out with Robert and Kim Kiyosaki, Peter Schiff, Tommy Hopkins, who was amazing this year. You know, Tom Hopkins is an icon in the sales world. I mean, he's trained millions and millions of salespeople, us included. And to now have time with him, he did an amazing thing. He came up while we're on the catamaran. He said, Robert, I want to talk to you about something. Michelle and I, his wife Michelle, have had such an amazing time here. And it was really great coming back for a second year. Because the first year, you don't know what to expect. And we had a blast. But this year, we came back to friends. We had people that we had seen, and some we had seen in the interim, and some we hadn't seen until next year, and it took on a completely different feel. He says, as long as you'll have us, we want to make this our annual event. So we're here to announce that the next time we sail, which is the 2016 Investor Summit at Sea, Tom Hopkins is going to join us again, and got more announcements coming up. If you go to the website at realestateguysradio.com, you can go to the advance list to register for your interest in the summit. And the minute we're ready to take reservations, we'll let you know about it. But just great to get all these folks from different disciplines, different ideologies to come together, right? I mean, Tom Hopkins is not an economics guy, but there he was, talking and listening to Peter Schiff, Robert Kiyosaki, getting his mind around this stuff. And to watch these guys kind of cross-pollinate was incredible.
It is. It really is incredible. And this is really the value. You know, the summit isn't a one-and-done deal. And I think Tom recognized that. And a lot of people recognize that. We have the vast majority of people come back year after year. And that's what makes it so great. This is a community of investors and educators. And we're really all students that are all dedicated to going through this experience of sailing through the economic ups and downs together and sharing our journey. And that sense of community that happens on the summit because of the time we spend together is so profound. And I would argue that based on what these brilliant men are suggesting is coming, and it isn't doom and gloom, far from it.
No.
I mean, we're all salivating over the opportunities that are going to exist when chaos occurs, because that's what happens. There are winners and there are losers, if you will, and it's really a matter of who's prepared. And not just educationally prepared, but who is taking active steps to prepare so that when the crash comes, you're in a position to benefit from it, and not just for yourself. Because we talked about this in the last crash. When the real estate market crashed and there were all kinds of properties falling into disrepair, tenants being displaced because landlords were broke, the people who were in a position to step into the marketplace and scoop those properties up, clean them up, get them re-tenanted, turn them back into safe, affordable housing, help the process of healing the housing market. Investors have a very important role to play in the wake of an economic disruption. Economic disruptions are just a fact of the system. That's the way it works. And so we can't say, oh, well, we don't want it to happen. It's going to happen. And we do our best to try to figure out when it's going to happen. We had a chance to talk to Donald Trump, and we said, well, what did you learn in the up times? Nothing. What did you learn in the down times? Always have a little cash to take advantage of the opportunities. In other words, bad times are good times when you're prepared. And that was really the theme. And so whether it's the Cancun event or the annual investor summit at SEA, we have a group of people that just go from thing to thing to thing. And we're all going through this journey together. And it's so fun at the reunions when we get a chance to say, okay, well, where are you at? What have you learned? What's new? What's going on? And that, I don't know how you can do that anywhere else.
It's amazing, actually, to think about that part of it. This year at the summit, we had nearly 140 people and 42 brand new people. So again, more than two-thirds have been before. But they're so inclusive. From the moment we're together, the new people are integrating into the conversations masterfully. By day two, everyone's buddies. By the end, it's hugs and tears between people who didn't even know each other 9 days before.
Yeah, well, I mean, that goes back to enlightened self-interest, because I think anybody who has been studying this recognizes that the more people who are prepared, the less severe the downturn is, the quicker the resources get marshaled to go fix the problem. And so we all understand the more people we recruit into the community, the more people are going to be a part of the solution when the problem comes. And so it isn't, there's no reason to be exclusive. It's not like there's scarcity. One of the things I really enjoy about the people, and especially the faculty, these are all people who've made it. They don't need anything from anybody, and we don't pay them, right? These are people who understand abundance, who realize the better everybody else is doing, the better they're doing. The world gets better when everybody does better, and everybody does better when the people who have share their knowledge, their wisdom, their opportunities, and we create more opportunities by cooperating. You know, I find that unsuccessful people are competitive. Unsuccessful people think win-lose. Unsuccessful people are trying to take, and they're not interested in giving, and really, when I hang around successful people, I find out they're exactly the opposite. They're generous. They're givers. They share. They want to see the other person make it. They're very cooperative. They help. They want to work together. And that's been, to me, over the years, as I've spent more and more time with more and more successful people, I've realized that the things, even in my own psychology, that I need to change to be more successful. And again, that's something you learn by just being in an intimate environment with people that are successful.
The specific outcome for this event is to get around the right people, to learn great ideas, but also be able to take action, which is why I think we're so much in alignment. Our motto is education for effective action. And we spoke to that many times in the summit, that it's great to learn. It's necessary to learn, but it's not sufficient to learn. You have to take what you learn and do something with it. And Simon's last global summit was 2 years ago, and he didn't announce a single speaker, didn't promote it as certain people being there. He just said, I'm getting together with a group of my folks. 600 people sold that event out in less than 3 days. And then when he stood on stage, he delivered Peter Schiff, Nigel Farage, Jim Rickards, Jim Rogers, and Ron Paul. That's the kind of impact this guy has. We're absolutely thrilled to be there and actually participate.
Yeah, it's great. We get to speak on real estate, which is going to be exciting. And it's a huge honor that Simon would feel that we were of a high enough caliber and have something to say to his audience. And then he invited you, Robert, to actually MC the event. Of course, you know, anybody who's been at an event with you know you're the consummate MC and a lot of energy. It's going to be a ton of fun. And so we would love to have a big contingent, or the biggest contingent we can get with the limited availability of tickets we have, of our listeners out there to support us and learn. We'd love to spend time with you. So if you've never come to an event, even a Real Estate Guys event, but if you've never been to an event like this, this would be a great one to cut your teeth on, if you will. You know, it means a trip to Cancun and at a great time of year, and it means a chance to be around a lot of other people who aren't necessarily real estate investors, but they're all very concerned about what's going on in the world and are looking for solutions. And if you want to get a chance to feel what it's like to be in that kind of an environment with these kind of people, this would be a great event to attend. We obviously highly recommend it. Again, realestateguysradio.com. Look under events. You'll see Simon Black's Global Investment Summit.
The worst thing that can happen is you'll enjoy a fabulous trip to Cancun. The best thing that can happen is you'll have your thinking expanded and you'll meet that one person that can explode your business. It's going to be great. We hope to see you there. Hey, big thanks to Jim Rickards for spending time out of his busy schedule to be with us. Can't wait to meet him face-to-face in Cancun. Next week on The Real Estate Guys, you'll hear from the faculty from our 13th Annual Investors Summit at SEA. It'll be a fun show in the middle of the ocean. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.